Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Forbidden Technique podcast with your boys, Silas and Christian. And it's fucking back to reality, back to the fucking apex for a card that is absolutely fine. Just, you know, the come down from UFC 300 is kind of like it is. It's another Apex card. To be fair,
it's pretty good as far as Apex cards go.
It's at least not one of these cards that, like, you get the vibe that it was match made by manatees in a tank full of balls with the fighters' names on it. Like, all the fights, like, make sense. It's pretty well booked. It's just kind of one of those cards that doesn't have a main event. Like, if the main event was the co-main event and it had a decent main event, this would be a pretty good card. But, you know, might be a kind of short one today, but we're going to try our best with this one. Main event is Matej Nicolau versus Alex Perez. Kind of fucking spicy move having Alex Perez fill in for a late notice replacement, because this was supposed to be the rematch between Matej Nicolau versus Manel Cape, who himself seems to be struggling to actually make it to the octagon these days. Alex Perez finally got back in the octagon with Mabed Makhachev a couple of months ago or something, and he looked absolutely fine and probably kinda had a case.
Kind of got robbed. I watched it yesterday. I think it was a robbery, but I'm not that upset about it.
Yeah, I thought Alex Perez won, but it was close enough. But he pretty much looked like himself and held his own just fine against a surging prospect. Of course, prior to that, has just had a truly dispiriting, ridiculously long sequence of cancellations. Guy just couldn't make it to fight night for one reason or another, and in the middle of that just had two losses where he got absolutely blown out of the water by Davison Figueiredo and Alexandre Pantoja. But those are guys that will do that to you.
Especially in that matchup where it's just a wrestle boxer, just kind of two matchups those guys feast on.
And it was, you know, before Figueiredo had shown any sign of falling off. As you say, for Pantoja, it's basically just a Charles Oliveira versus Nick Lentz archetype matchup, and we know how those go. Whereas Matej Nicolau, you know, this is to me, a pretty clear-cut dynamic of two pretty solid, well-rounded wrestle boxers, but one of them goes forward and is more athletic.
Yeah, I don't really disagree. I feel like Nicolau, less so than going backwards, I feel like he just is really scared of being close to his opponent for long periods of time. So I think he would stand still if his opponent didn't always walk at him, but his opponents tend to want to be closer to him because if you take a step closer to him, he just takes a step back. Take another step, he starts circling.
And Nicolau's entire game is built around countering people in the moment where they want to engage the pocket with him. He hates being in the pocket for any real prolonged period of time, and he is just a dyed-in-the-wool counterpuncher who absolutely hates to lead. He really just wants to use his distance and footwork to circle away and maintain that distance where people have to walk up on him, and then he wants to like hit them with a crisp 2-3 as they're entering in on him, and then get out the way with a pivot and just exit the exchange and then just try and do that over and over again. But he's not a counterpuncher who really commands any initiative with non-committal ranged volume. And, you know, his defense is all that distance management, and all of his counterpunching is based on like the first layer. He's really not someone who's going to slip a shot and then stay there in an exchange to find counters as the exchange goes deeper, because he just wants to avoid the pocket at all cost. And then he'll also, as a safety valve, hit like reactive counter level change takedowns, and he's pretty good on the ground. Alex Perez likes to pressure and throw 1-1-2s and low kicks, and he's pretty fucking good about defensive wrestling. And sometimes we'll just, like, if he gets someone to the fence, he'll just throw like 20 punches.
Yeah, I think a difficulty for Perez is that he's just a very chokeable guy. And Nicolau, you know, he's got a Darce choke win, He's got a Japanese necktie win. Like, he's quite difficult to just, like, scramble with if you're a guy that is known for getting guillotined all the time.
Is Perez a guy who's known for getting guillotined all the time, or does he just get choked by really dynamic people who are great at choking people?
Well, he got prayer choked in 2015 by a guy I don't know of, and he got guillotined in, like, his fourth fight. I feel like at a certain point, it's not about how good someone gets. It's just, this guy used to get choked, and he still gets choked. He's just a guy that gets choked sometimes. Some people just have, they just have bad luck in that regard. They're just not very good at avoiding being choked. Not expecting it to be as much of a problem as Nicolau always going backwards and Alex Perez liking to go forward is going to be for Nicolau, because Perez isn't a clumsy fighter. Normally, he's a little over-aggressive sometimes, but I think that serves him in this matchup because Nicolau is overly defensive. So I could see Nicolau coming off of a knockout loss about a year ago, coming back as a counterpuncher and just looking kind of shitty in the first round, and Perez getting enough of a ball rolling to either take over completely by the end of the fight or just win in the first round. Because Nicolau has problems with someone that can just start real fast. And Perez, he's not really... He's lost in the first round, but against other people that are good at neutralizing fast starts or fast starters themselves.
Yeah, like, the through line that I seem to draw between Perez's fights more than him, like, just getting caught with a slick choke or anything like that, is just he is a guy who likes to bully people who, if he fights a physical force that can just, like, roll up on him... and out-physical him, he fucking hates that.
He has really bad first-layer defense for most things. He just has a pretty good chin.
You know what I mean? He got destroyed by Joe Benavidez because Joe Benavidez was still someone who would just roll up on someone and put power on them and make you have a brawl with him and see if you can fucking handle it. And he couldn't. Shit happens. Nicolau is going to give... Like, I think he is going to be able to land some decent counters on Perez as he's coming in, but... I think just the fact that Perez actually just keeps a healthy volume of jabs when he's coming forward, like, he's not going to give Nicolau things that are easy to counter if he's relying on Perez stepping in on him with something over-aggressive and wide and not set up that he can get that clean counter off. Pretty hard to counter someone who just fucking jabs you and low kicks you all the time.
I agree. Nicolau has a problem, though, when it comes to... Like, he hits hard, but he's not a very accurate hitter, and he gets a little flaily and panicked whenever he's trying to throw counters a lot of the time. Like, you look at most of his knockdowns, and they're kind of frantic looking. It'll be like, oh, it was a hard shot, and you know, he'll follow up if the person is, like, staying hurt long enough. But there's a reason that it took him, like, 3 knockdowns to finish Matt Schnell, because... He would hurt him and then completely fumble the finish because he was panicking. Because he's like, ah, fuck, I hurt him when I was just like throwing my arm out with my eyes looking away from him. Sometimes he's a bit more calculated about it. It's really the main thing that he needs to work on to progress as a counterpuncher is his ability to just keep his eyes on the target and stay safe whenever he's actually throwing offense instead of just staying safe and then throwing offense.
See, I think it's the fact that he just will not lead from range and... His only means of getting the counter opportunities that he needs are his footwork and distance management.
And the style's really only working because he's at flyweight, where people are inherently going to throw a lot of volume.
Yeah, but then also it just fucking doesn't work sometimes because you fight someone who is really good at throwing things away to draw out reactions and capitalizing on them, and you get knocked the fuck out by Brandon Royval or... You know, you get fucking just kind of smoked for every moment that you're on the feet with Manel Cape because you're letting people come forward and put together offense and you're relying solely on reacting to what your opponent is doing rather than actually trying to make them do the things that you want them to do to land your best shots. Tej Nicolau needs a fucking jab, my dude.
Yeah, or a teep kick. Something that he will throw out to just pull out offense from people. Because he's insulated to a degree by being at flyweight as a counterpuncher that's unwilling to pull out counters or very rarely pulls out counters. But it's a dual-edged sword, because Flywhits will throw volume at someone that's just waiting to counter as well, but also they're fast enough to where you gotta be really fucking quick on the trigger with that counter if you want to nail someone, because if you try that game against someone that's like Alex Perez, who might just run up and fucking blast you real quick a few times, then you're gonna eat an 8-punch combination, like, trying to find your moment to land a counter. So I'm expecting Perez to get good boxing offense off and then keep Nicolau in the cage, because Nicolau is very panicked when he starts losing. Normally, if Nicolau looks like he's about to start losing, he starts losing very fast.
Yeah, so I am going to pick Alex Perez. Fuck it. I'm going to say he is jabbing his way in, and then Nicolau goes for a left hook counter, and then Perez lands a big right hand over Nicolau's whiffing left hook, and he dies.
Yeah, Nicolau does have a good chance in the matchup, especially with Perez being on short notice. Perez having a good chin is something that it makes me a lot less worried about Nicolau, or worried about Perez getting knocked out, because Mateusz has hard counters, but he lands on, like, the side of the head a lot. He lands on, like, the forehead, which can be good to knock someone out, but not someone that's, like, as traditionally hard-headed as Perez seems to be. His killer instinct that he does have is neutered by him having just bad footing after he's hurt someone, because every time he hurts someone, he's like, oh, I was not ready to follow up on that.
Yeah, because he's already trying to get away from the exchange. That's baked into his counter, is when you land something, you just get the fuck out and just reset and just start the whole process again.
So we're both picking Perez. Ryan Spann versus Bogdan Guskov. This is weird one.
It's a stupid light heavyweight fight between two really messy brawlers.
He just fought Anthony Smith. Why is he rematching Anthony Smith?
I think people are just trying to now get vicarious revenge on Anthony Smith by beating Bogdan Guskov. Like, you know, Volkan Oezdemir just fucking, like, easily submitted this guy, and he was like, nice, I beat Anthony Smith, and now Ryan Spann's like, oh, I gotta get some of that. That's like all I have to say about this fight. You know, Guskov is like, he comes to bang and he hits pretty hard.
Bogdan Guskov is a markedly different fighter. He's like an okay boxer. I think that he's not as liable to just get jab finished. I think he's probably gonna make the striking very annoying for Spann, because Spann likes to throw a big power shot, and if you show a counter, he's like, please don't counter me, and then he stops throwing as much. Bogdan Guskov is just going to throw a bunch of punches to where it's unsafe to have that sort of style where you're just wanting to throw a big shot and then kind of move away.
Fuck it, I'm going to say Bogdan Guskov by knockout, just because he's a lunatic, and if he hits Ryan Spann with something good, then Ryan Spann will just start, like, panicking and putting his feet in really wacky positions, and the fight just becomes fucking Ryan Spann on ice.
I'm going to say Spann wins by
maybe, like, guillotine or something.
I could just see him getting on top.
Just does a big strong on Guskov.
What we have seen of his grappling is quite underwhelming, to say the least, but I think that if Volkan Oezdemir can sub you in the first round, then Ryan Spann can probably win a decision against you, at least. If not, you know, wear you down and submit you.
And I say Ryan Spann's got some dumb strongman submissions.
Dumb strongman submissions, and he gets tired, but he doesn't lose very much strength, I don't feel like. I feel like it's one of his better athletic traits, is like keeping his strength throughout the fight.
Yeah, he just completely runs out of ideas.
Yeah, which is sometimes less bad than running out of strength. Because who needs ideas when you've got the strength to make bad ones work?
Okay, so in a fight that I actually expect to be dramatically better than that one, Karine Silva is fighting Ariane Lipski. This is a cool fight at women's flyweight. Karine Silva is 17-4 with all finishes in her wins. She's kind of like a Du Bronx archetype violence Brazilian. Has a pretty tight, like, pressuring Brazilian Muay Thai style on the feet, and she's pretty good with hitting counter reactive takedowns when she's drawing out reactions from her opponent with her pressure. and she can put shots behind her punches pretty good, and she does wacky submissions. Ariane Lipsky, this is a real how much better have you gotten since you lost to every specialist you fought in your early UFC career? Because, I mean, Ariane Lipsky looked absolutely fantastic against Casey O'Neill. Looked like she's really been putting together the kind of game that she has like wanted to have the whole time, but just didn't have the technical competence or experience and just like got into just silly, wacky brawls all the time. You know, wasn't that long ago she got knocked the fuck out in like a minute by Priscilla Cachuera. She was clearly a totally different fighter to the one that got like finished on the ground by Antonina Shevchenko and Montana De La Rosa. She just like easily boxed up Casey O'Neill and shut down every takedown attempt and looked twice as strong as Casey O'Neill and tossed her around and bopped her up in exchanges on the feet and submitted her. It was badass. I'm going to pick Corinne Silva because she's really insistent about pressing a grappling advantage against everyone she fights. And she's just a fucking like crazy dynamic submission artist. So I think it's probably going to be a war on the feet as long as it lasts. And Lipsky is going to be landing some clean 1-2s on Silva as she's coming in. It should just be a good ass fight, to be honest.
Yeah, Lipsky's offense on the feet is just a lot more potent. It's just every time Ariane Lipsky lands on people, at least in her recent fights, she's looking a lot fucking stronger. She hits a lot harder than she used to, which used to be one of her main issues, is that she'd hit okay, but she just looks like she's turned an athletic corner lately, I feel. And aside from, you know, you make a good point. Aside from the fact that Karina Silva has a loss by knee bar and Ariane Lipsky has won by knee bar against Luana Carolina, who's a markedly worse athlete than Karina Silva.
And in a really fucking wacky position where Ariane Lipsky were like, I'm pretty sure she was like getting calf sliced while that happened. It was just, it was some real silly shit. It was badass.
It's goofy.
I don't really expect Corinne Silva to be getting caught in anything like that. She's really fucking solid as a grappler.
And she is. And she hasn't been submitted in a while.
Ariane Lipsky showed a massive improvement in just a general first layer takedown defense. And that if she has the like positional initiative, she will fuck someone up on the ground who even is as good on the ground as Casey O'Neill.
And Corinne Silva hasn't been submitted in 7 years, so it's just a little reductive to be like, oh, she's been knee-barred. But I think a big difficulty for Lipsky is that Corinne Silva can pass guard, unlike most MMA fighters. She'll actually just decide, I'm not getting enough done from this position. Let me get to a new position and try and follow up on prior successes. And Ariane Lipsky, she's okay at re-guarding, but she's just going to try and go for an armbar if someone's like is trying to get into a different position. Which Corinne Silva's, she's wise to it. She's been submitted by armbar before. She got the prospect sub loss to Marina Moroz, so she's not going to leave her arm hanging out like that, I don't think. On the grappling, it feels like Corinne Silva has just a lot of advantages over Ariane Lipsky. But then again, I do need to see Lipsky versus someone that isn't a horrible athlete, because she's looked good against Melissa Gatto, JJ Aldrich, Casey O'Neill. But those three have one thing in common. They're all really fucking bad athletes. And Corinne Silva is a pretty damn good one. She's strong. She's powerful. Her cardio stays. She's got a pretty deep well of ideas she can dig into if she needs to. Her kicking offense is a lot neater than anything Lipsky throws. I feel like on a technical level, Corinne Silva has many advantages, but most of those are undercut by the fact that Lipsky has a long 1-2 and is a lot better about finishing someone with the hands if she hurts someone than Corinne Silva is.
Yeah, Corinne Silva has like pretty good form on most of her strikes and throws more variety than Ariane Lipsky.
She'll throw kick combos. She'll throw like four kicks consecutively.
Yeah, whereas like you say, Aaron Ilipski has that real nice just intercepting 1-2.
And a fucking left hook like a motherfucker. Both got a pretty good left hook.
Yeah, and this stuff's all going to be real good against someone who just like is always coming forward as square as Karine Silva is. Also, yeah, I think Karine Silva has more like variety in her kicks, but Aaron Ilipski has that really nice, quick, whippy left high kick that she loves to throw on the end of every exchange. It's the classic just kick the rear hand and stop people from wanting to throw it. And yeah, she throws it with like barely any hit, but gets a really good whip into it with the knee. So it's just like really hard to read and comes on the end of almost every exchange as you're backing out.
I feel like they have an overlapping flaw that kind of painted their earlier career, where they start fast just innately, but they were not good enough to be as fast of starters as they were initially. And now they've both kind of eased into their style. It took Aaron Ilipski a lot longer to get comfortable with being a first round starter, but even then it's not perfect. You know, she got knocked out in a round by, or in a minute by Priscilla Cachoeira, but that'll happen. So I think that Karina Silva is a lot more composed about how to manage herself over three rounds, despite Lipski having more UFC experience. But I'm going to pick Silva by submission.
Yeah, I'm also going to pick Silva by submission. And yeah, I think Lipski, while she has more UFC experience, I think she also maybe has the problem of someone who didn't get to develop her game in as safe an environment because she got to the UFC so much earlier in her career, and it was so much more sink or swim. I think Silva's just a really fucking hard matchup for Ariane Ilipski to test all of the stuff that she's clearly gotten a lot better at over the last few years. But then it's like, how much better do you have to have gotten at that to win this particular matchup? Okay, we got fucking Jonata Deniz versus Austin Lane. Deniz is a pretty fucking neat kickboxer.
Yeah, if we were just talking about a kickboxing card, then Jonata Deniz would be incredibly underwhelming, probably. But by MMA standards, he's one of the best converts we've had in a while. He seems like his game works really well for MMA.
By MMA heavyweight standards in particular.
Oh, especially.
This is a guy who like has a little bit of defense and can hang around in an exchange.
His striking game actually has a layer to it. He likes to draw out jabs or really any big committed movement from someone. He doesn't need a huge commitment. You can just kind of throw out a jab lazily and he'll counter you for it, but he likes things that pop a jab, wait a beat, they'll throw a jab or they'll throw a right hand, they throw a huge fucking shot over it. And that is about three layers deeper than most strikers at heavyweight tend to get, so I'm pretty jazzed about him. And he's got really good shot selection. He's got a nice 1-2. He sticks to a pretty tight shot selection. He doesn't seem to throw too much bullshit at the wall. He seems like, yeah, he's a competent combination boxer. We don't really know much about his grappling, but I don't think Austin Lane's really got to try it. Because Austin Lane, he loves sticking his arm outstretched and either eye-poking you or getting viciously countered over his jab.
Yes, he's a flighty volume striker with no defense who got knocked out by Greg Hardy. Jonata Deniz should be an absolute lock to just fucking wipe Austin Lane off of the face of the planet.
But I could see Lane being someone that's so prone to moving around being something that will make Deniz look kind of shitty. Not bad. Like, I still think he'll win by knockout, but I could see Lane just making the fight go a little bit longer because he's just running away. And Deniz isn't the type of guy that's going to sprint at you, it doesn't seem like.
That didn't work against fucking Justin Taffer, one of the most plodding single-shot power punches we've ever seen.
That's true, but Justin Taffer has, like, main character shit, where he'll just get the shot, even though it's unlikely in the matchup or something. Or, like, he'll just land that one counter. We don't have enough consistency with Deniz in MMA yet to know if he's going to be a guy that can actually just win the matchups he should, or if he's going to have some fuckiness to it. But as far as we have seen, Deniz seems like a pretty damn good prospect at heavyweight. And he's quite young. He's 32.
He's a baby for a heavyweight. And he just looking at their kickboxing stuff, He's like better than Jarzynia Rosenstruck.
Yeah, I mean, he fought Rico Rubin when he was like 21 or something. Kind of an insane career trajectory to go from fighting Rico Rubin when you're 21 to fighting Austin Lane when you're 32.
Wasn't that long ago that Alex Pereira was fighting fucking... What was that guy's name?
In 2013, Pereira didn't really even have any fights. He started kickboxing quite late. So maybe Junata Deniz is the new Alex Pereira. Let's just say that before this fight. He's going to knock out Austin Lane so hard that it makes headlines everywhere. That's my pick. People start saying they want to see him versus Pereira. All of a sudden, he's a star because heavyweight is starved for that. Then we have like maybe the best pure matchup on the card for me in Jonathan Pierce, David Onama.
I think David Onama is going to win by knockout pretty comfortably. Jonathan Pierce is he's a good positional grappler, but he is like an entirely positionally focused fighter, and his boxing defense is bad. Like you see him in like that Darren Elkins fight, and it's like, oh yeah, it wasn't just one of those things that happens to you as a prospect when you got knocked the fuck out by Joe Lozon, because in a fight where Darren Elkins was getting thoroughly tooled because he's old Darren Elkins, he was still very consistently landing like big clubbing overhands on Jonathan Pierce. David Onama is a hoss and hits hard, and he's like fucking accurate and throws in combination. I think he might like get taken down by Jonathan Pierce a bit and still win by knockout very comfortably.
I don't necessarily disagree, but I think that Jonathan Pierce has a lot of upside in the matchup if he just doesn't get ninja choked randomly. Because, you know, the Joanderson Brito fight, it's not even in unreplicable way for him to lose that fight. I could see that fight happening 10 times and Joanderson Brito just like sneaks in the ninja choke like 7 times or something. But he was winning the minutes of that fight a lot.
I think Joanderson Brito wins by knockout like 7 out of 10 times.
I get that. Jonathan Pierce could win this fight if David Onama slows as heavily as he has seemed like he is slowable in fights against Nate Landwehr or Mason Jones, where he had good performances in parts of it, but they're really just spirited losses, because he would have a big-ass moment a few times, but then just get ground the fuck out. And Jonathan Pierce he's searching for that victory. We know he's going to come in with the right approach, and I feel like picking Onama is picking someone that's going to fight the wrong fight to win just off power, which I don't think is necessarily wrong. I still think he's got a good chance of winning. I'm just going to pick Jonathan Pierce because I know he's going to try the right things to win.
Yeah, like you say, if I'm picking this to be a fight where Jonathan Pierce is likely to even get a takedown in the first round, yeah, Onama got the most tired I've ever seen anyone in that fight with Nate Landwehr. I mean, Mason Jones just has a fucking nuts chin and is capable of just, like, walking through the fire and eating shit.
Yeah, so is Nate Landwehr.
To keep the pressure up on David Onama. I just think Jonathan Pierce is, like, it's just such a bad matchup for him on the feet. It's just one of those fights where, I don't know, maybe Jonathan Pierce has the more consistent, strategically smart route to victory, but David Onama just has so many opportunities to win the fight very suddenly.
Yeah, do you think Onama will try to go for a guillotine if Jonathan Pierce shoots for a takedown with his head on the outside? Because David Onama has a guillotine win. It seems like something that he would want to go for if his opponent just lost by ninja choke. Or it will at least cause enough pause. Like, I don't know if Jonathan Pierce is going to be strong enough in the first round or a good enough wrestler to get the takedown if Onama does, like, the noob trap of reaching for a guillotine grip whenever someone shoots for a takedown. It might just work. It might just, like, stand up Jonathan Pierce. So that's a difficulty. I think if Jonathan Pierce gets a takedown in the first round, his chances of winning are up by, like, 70%. But if he can't get a takedown in the first, like, 3 or 4 minutes, he probably gets hit hard enough to where he can't really get much done. I could see him getting some offense off if Onama's just really worried about the takedown for some reason, but he's lost fights where people are taking him down and still been able to beat the shit out of him whenever he's standing. So I don't think Onama necessarily has that problem. I'm going to pick Jonathan Pierce by second round submission.
Okay, so we got Tim Means versus Uroš Medić. This fight would be cool and rad, but Tim Means is old. That's basically all there is to it.
Uroš Medić is a really fast straight hitter that's in his prime. He just has like a fifth of the fights. So yeah. On experience, I think Tim Means has a pretty substantial advantage. And if Tim Means can get a takedown, which not impossible, he's got a kind of weird timing on his takedown that only comes with someone being a super fucking experienced MMA all-rounder. But Uroš, he should be good enough to like not get Tim Means takedowns. Like, at least not by 40-year-old Tim Means.
Yeah, if this was Tim Means like 5 years ago, when he was still old, but not fucking old, I'd probably pick Tim Means even to just win a kickboxing match, because Tim Means is...
scrappy as hell.
I mean, it's southpaw, except Tim Means has a jab and is really sneaky in the clinch. Uroš Medić, he's a pretty nice, creative, offensively sharp kickboxer.
He's good at countering basically anything you want to do if he gets the timing right. He's not lost on the feet against any matchup, it doesn't feel like.
I think he just has a little bit of a problem where he doesn't throw as much as he could be because he's just trying to set up really slick counter combination kill shots, whereas he's really very effective when he's just moving around throwing 1-2s and body kicks.
Yeah, most of his finishes come from him just starting to throw more and then each shot just chipping away at the guy really quickly. Because if you tell me that he's going to throw 10 1-2s within the first round against Tim Means, I'd say he probably wins by knockout in the first round.
Yeah, and he always works the body, which you love to see. He doesn't have the greatest defense or anything, but he'll adjust to shit if he was getting fucking just dinged by big right hands from Matthew Semelsberger in the first round.
And Semi hits hard as fuck.
He hits hard as fuck. He's just like a very plodding, limited power puncher. And Uroš Medić was really used to having a massive reach advantage that he used to insulate himself defensively when he was at lightweight. And then he goes up to 170 and fights one of the biggest welterweights. And, you know, just got caught by someone who could throw power at a range that he wasn't particularly comfortable with. But he adjusted to it well over the course of the fight because Matthew Semelsberger wasn't, you know, once he had thrown the big right hand and Uroš Medić had gotten out the way of it, he wasn't going to capitalize on Uroš Medić just like leaning backwards and being out of position to throw back in that moment. So he just gradually gets tooled as the fight goes deeper and the body damage built up. Uroš Medić could just like stick to the basics and just like be a southpaw who jabs and does body kicks and have so much more consistent round winning ability if he wasn't just trying to knock people out all the time. He's basically Giga Jakadze in that way, you know?
And the Miktabek fight isn't even that bad of a look because it was like weird context. And also he held his own against a guy that was just kind of a fucking awful matchup for him.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be fighting a striker who's less athletic than him. And you know he'd spent his whole camp just like drilling fucking knockout sequences.
Yeah.
And then fought a really good guy who's kind of an unknown quantity on like
that's
a week's notice.
Very concise on the feet and not going to give you a ton to work with. If you're wanting a bunch of cool, slick moves.
No, he just got fucking khabibed by a guy who pressures behind jabs and jabs into takedowns and fucking absolutely smushed him on the ground. I just don't really expect Tim Means to go for that too hard and for Uroš Medić to be like ready enough with first layer takedown defense in the first round and then probably still just like hit Tim Means with some fuck shit while they're in close. So I'm going to pick Uroš Medić by like second round knockout.
I'm gonna say Tim Means because it's hard for me to pick someone with 11 fights over someone with like 49 fights just on merit. Like I know that Tim Means can navigate difficult matchups. He's like beaten matchups that are way more lopsided than this one. I think Medić on youth has tons of advantages, but I always feel a pit in my heart whenever I pick someone just because I think the other guy's shot. So I'm going to say Tim Means by submission off of tooling Medić on the feet for a couple minutes and then getting an easy takedown. And Means is vicious on top.
And this is not even the purest glue factory matchup on this card.
Yeah, we got Hani Yaya.
And we got fucking Gabriel Benitez fighting Mahashate, which we'll talk about later. You know, of the Glue Factory matchups on this card, it's like, yeah, at least Uros Medic is like pretty good and a cool matchup for Tim Means, and they're going to get to have a rad kickboxing match for some amount of the fight. There's just a point where I can't pick because of experience anymore, and it's just like, yeah, he's just too slow and fragile now, and he's fighting someone who's like really fast and offensively dynamic
and also so different from the last matchup that allowed Means to look good in Fialho is a stocky short boxer that is really easy to just spark if you keep landing a bunch of shots.
Yeah, and if you can actually just put volume on from range, he'll just like keep plodding into it and then believe in himself less and less until he gets knocked out. Uros Medic is like, he's like a dog.
This is not a matchup that he has beaten in a long time. Like, he hasn't won this type of matchup since like 2015.
So I kind of think Tim Means is like, he might even be like winning some exchanges on the feet and then just get fucking hit with something.
Yeah, I could see him having good success with 1-2s as well, and then just getting check hooked over one of them. Especially in the southpaw. So we have Hani Yaya fighting Victor Henry. Now
Victor Henry should just torch Hani Yaya.
Like, obviously he should, but Victor Henry has a weird thing of letting people have their game, like, just a bit more than he probably should, even in matchups that he's otherwise pretty cleanly winning or looking great in. Like the Hani Barcelos fight, most people that are having that amount of success shut their opponent out of it, in opposed to their opponent continuously attacking and just continuously losing. Like that fight ended up being like not competitive on scoring, but like very hard fought, just because Victor Henry only presses his advantages so much.
It's why the fight was a banger, because Victor Henry, he couldn't really defuse Hani Barcelos as a counterpuncher. He could just fucking throw more than him and just outwork him.
Yeah, he could just beat him while he was doing his thing.
That's what made it a great fight. Now, the thing about this one is, of course, he can just like walk Hani Yaya down and kind of torch him on the feet. But Yaya is just fucking weird and he's really annoying to grapple with. And Victor Henry grapples with everyone who wants to grapple with him.
He's a catch wrestler, and he defends takedowns by making contact. He doesn't defend takedowns with distance or by being too far away or cutting a sick angle. He defends takedowns by defending the takedown.
Yeah, so Yaya is just going to be able to like do the classic Damian Maya, shoot a shitty single leg to pull guard off of. And Henry will get into his guard, and I don't know, like, yeah, then maybe Yaya finds a weird way to get into the fight just off of being on bottom half guard and like landing some annoying elbows from bottom and getting a sweep, and then suddenly the fight just weirdly starts getting away from Victor Henry. I think he should just not grapple with Hani Yaya. I know I'm always a fucking asshole about this, because either I'll be like, oh, if the guy is just going to pull guard and insist on grappling with you, then just like show him that you're not a bitch and get on top of him and beat the fuck out of him. But then also it happens so much where people insist on doing that. And then,
and it sounds like a good idea until you're being splaydled.
And then you get Amanda Lemos, Mackenzie Dernd, where you get fucking swept and end up like throwing, like almost throwing rounds away in a fight where you basically won by knockout multiple times. I could just see that kind of thing happening in this matchup. Still going to pick Victor Henry, like, by knockout. I'm going to say, like, clinch elbow knockout or something. But I don't know. There's room in this matchup for Hani Yaya to be a fucking annoying old jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah, in particular, the catch wrestling that Victor Henry likes to do when he scrambles just leaves a lot of opportunity for Hani Yaya to grab some of his signature really fucking weird holds that I'm sure Victor Henry is well prepared for. I mean, he's a Josh Barnett student, of course, so he's like, he knows how to handle kind of weird grapplers, but knowing how to deal with it and having the discipline to actually do that are very different things. And Victor Henry, he's a very consistent fighter in a lot of ways, but he's a little undisciplined in my eyes. I think that most of the fights that he hasn't had as... Like the Javid Basharat fight and the Sun Tzu fight, I think that he definitely could have won if he fought differently. And the Javid Basharat, of course, was like accidental groin kick, whatever.
He wasn't like badly losing the Javid Basharat fight before he got like disgustingly nut kicked in the second round.
It was a very close fight, but I think that the fight could have been very heavily in his favor if he was just a bit more disciplined of a game planner or more insistent about sticking to what's working for him. I feel like this match is a huge step down in terms of how hard he has to try to maintain his game plan. Because, you know, his game plan for Sun Tzu, it would have required a lot of trigger discipline about, you know, going for counters. It would have required a lot of discipline in regards to, you know, what positions he's going to give up for shot takedowns. If Sun Tzu wants to, you know, mix it up, he would have needed a lot of discipline about his rhythm. He would have not been allowed to get as flowy as he tends to like to. In this matchup, the only limiter is that he needs to just not fucking grapple with him, because if you give him any chance of winning, then he might win.
I kind of saw the Sun Tzu one as like Victor Henry just not being a deep enough kickboxer to defuse Sun Tzu's counterpunching, because he would pretty much only be committing to offense whenever he got Sun Tzu to the fence, and Sun Tzu was so prepared with like a couple of specific counters that he was going to hit as one size fits all every time to just like land a slip right hand or a reactive double leg on Victor Henry. And Victor Henry just didn't have the tools to be able to trick Rafael Sun Tzu and keep him guessing while Henry was trying to pressure to actually be able to get consistent offense off on him.
Yeah, Henry's also not a guy that's going to just go up and buzzsaw someone, which is probably what he should have done if he wanted to beat him, because that would have been a...
He also just didn't treat Sun Tzu like a shambling old man.
Allowed him to have his full game, and that's what I mean about like the discipline. I think Henry could have like gotten his game to work if he just fucking went really hard but stayed disciplined about picking his spots instead of kind of just trying every spot and getting countered for it over and over. Like, I don't think he's disciplined enough to stop himself from grappling with Hani Yahya if Hani Yahya's really wanting to. Like, if Hani Yahya is falling back to his back and just looking for goofy situations to start grappling scenarios, if he's shooting in shitty single legs, if he's just clinging to him with body locks, I don't think Victor Henry's gonna be like, nah, I gotta shuck him off and get back to my game. I think he'll try and grapple him away and do some silly catch wrestling.
Yeah, because Victor Henry, you know, his game is built around just being able to outwork his opponent wherever the fight goes. Affords him a lot of success in some decent matchups, but
that's not how you beat Hani Yahya.
Yeah, if you're not going to have a strong game that you're going to enforce,
Hani Yahya, he fucking will.
Yeah, and you end up in some really close fights with or losing to matchups that you in theory have the tools to be able to kind of just shut down if you have the right approach. I'm going to say he still knocks out Hani Yahya, because Hani Yahya is fucking old.
They're 3 years in age difference.
It just doesn't feel that way when you watch them.
It's a big 3 years, yeah. Age is not age, necessarily. I get what you're saying. I think that Victor Henry definitely should be a massive favorite. I just don't trust him, because he's a fighter that is very prone to his own temperament on the night, taking control of him. And Hani Yahya is not. Hani Yahya is going to do what he went out there to do, which is try and get really goofy situations that Victor Henry's probably going to give him loads of opportunities against. Or loads of opportunities to get.
Are you picking Hani Yahya?
You know I want to. I'm going to, because you're picking Victor Henry and there's no pressure, so I'm going to pick my favorite. But I'm going to say Hani Yahya is going to get him in like a reverse quarter Nelson while also having like both of his legs trapped or something. And then he'll like win by digging his thumb into Victor Henry's ribs.
Okay, we got Austin Hubbard versus Mikhail Figlak. Mikhail Figlak has a real guy who has the sauce to blow people out when he's fighting in Cage Warriors and then gets to the UFC and loses a neutralizing decision to Faraz Ziam. Energy? Austin Hubbard is exactly that kind of guy. Austin Hubbard has such like Brad Tavares syndrome, where he's like real good at a bunch of stuff, but does nothing to command the initiative of the fight, much less than Victor Henry. At least Victor Henry like constantly tries to pressure and throw volume. He just doesn't have ways of insulating himself from his opponent's fight. Austin Hubbard just always lets people have the fight that they want to have and is just like pretty solid defensively and pretty okay everywhere. And because of it, loses fights to guys like Kurt Hollabaugh, who he kind of physically outclasses, but Kurt Hollabaugh is a lunatic who goes hard as a motherfucker. So
I also have the take that Austin Hubbard is worse since he got back to the UFC. I think he was better when he was a bit fresher, because he was a young veteran that, unlike most young veterans, is like just a lot worse at being a veteran when he's actually a veteran. Because, you know, Masvidal, he got some advantages. Like, you look at most old veterans, they normally have, like, a resurgence in their later career. I feel like Austin Hubbard got away from what made him good and is now prone to losing the matchups that he used to just kind of feast on.
Yeah, the thing is about, like, most young veterans, when they become old young veterans, they develop a meanness that they were always lacking, and that's why they just kind of drop so many tepid decisions in their early mid-career.
And Hubbard doesn't have that yet, at least. You know, maybe if he's 35, you know, ask me again. But right now, he looks like he's just in his physical prime, but fighting the worst he's ever fought.
The guys who have that kind of late resurgence are dudes like, yeah, Masvidal, Robbie Lawler, Bobby Green. They always reach that point where they're like, this is fucking stupid. I'm going to go up and blast a bitch. And Austin Hubbard needs some of that. And Mikhail Figlak is all go up and blast a bitch. So I'm going to pick Austin
and
Hubbard.
And he hasn't fought in a couple of years. He's 27 now. It's basically a different fighter as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I am still, you know, if I'm going to pick Mikhail Figlak. He has physical potential and he's always trying to enforce his game.
And also, it's not like we're picking a guy that isn't a real prospect to beat Austin Hubbard. Figlak's good.
Yeah, and he knows what he wants to do, and what he wants to do is big punch.
Yeah, and he's not really going against any disadvantages or particular advantages physically. He's just a bit younger and seems like he's, you know, streaking. And or not streaking because he's just lost, but he lost 2 years ago. He's basically still fine. And Faraz Ziam's annoying to fight. I get it. It's not like he got knocked out.
That's what I mean. Faraz Ziam is just, it's also so much in that mold of a guy who's just real fucking well-rounded and solid. And if you don't have some sauce to go up and fuck him up, then he will win a decision over you.
Yeah. The rest of the card has basically nothing to talk about except for Gabriel Benitez versus Mahashate.
And this is another one. Now, this is the purest Glue Factory matchup on this card, because you've got a guy in Gabriel Benitez who's like actually a pretty fucking good technician who's just shot, versus Mahashate, who is
a 6 foot tall lightweight that's 24.
He's not very good, but he is huge and violent.
He's not very good, but like he got knocked out by Vyacheslav Borshev. You know, it's Vyacheslav. He knocks people out.
Still went to war with Slava Claus.
Yeah, and Benitez is a former featherweight that has like not looked very good at lightweight, I don't think. He beat Charlie Ontiveros, who loses to everyone.
I'm still going to say that Benitez is going to be tooling Mahashate in the first round before he just gets knocked out with like the goofiest left hook you've ever seen.
Yeah, Mahashate, I think, has... he's 6 foot. It's ridiculous. He's a 6 foot. He's like a large lightweight fighting a guy that used to be a featherweight. And Mahashate is likely to get bigger than he is to get smaller because he's 24. So a guy could be fighting a welterweight soon enough, and just because he's on like a couple losing streak, they're like, yeah, let's get him back into the either the winning column or let's see if he's bad. Because if he loses this fight, he's probably not going to be anything. Because the experience difference is massive, but also the fucking shotness difference is massive. Gabriel Benitez has not looked like himself for years at this point. And he had a hard career.
But then you're going to pick Tim Means? Because like, at least Uros Medic is good.
Like, yeah. Machate, I think it has potential. Like, he's 24. He could be good now. You know? Any fight, suddenly he could be good. He's very athletic. I think he's a better... I think the athletic difference is a lot more noticeable in this one. Because Tim Means and Uros Medic have like similar frames, at least. And it's like a weird stance dynamic. Whereas Machate is like, oh no, I'm fighting a southpaw that's fucking half my size.
Yeah, I mean, he also just like absolutely splattered Steve Garcia, who is not as good technically, but a lot fucking younger than Gabriel Benitez.
A lot younger and has a pretty fucking good chin. And Gabriel Benitez had a very good chin. His chin's fine now, but, you know, I don't trust a fine chin for a featherweight against a lightweight. And I'm going to keep saying he's a featherweight until he looks like he isn't massively outsized by fucking Jim Miller. Not massively, but...
And he's still lost by knockout in his prime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always been a guy that can get finished. Like, this could just be a fight that he could lose anyways, because he... In any matchup where Gabriel Benitez versus a banger, he might get banged.
All right, well, that's it. Cards, okay.
This podcast, we got a lot more out of it than we thought we were.
Yeah, we'll be back to talk about anything cool that happens off this card next week, but probably mostly talk about UFC 301, which is also, for a pay-per-view, fine. We'll see you guys then. Peace.
Later.